Blog Talk Radio.
His cleanup hitters. Frat House Mike coming back to you here this evening after serving a one-week suspension for, oh, I forget what it was. Was it speaking out against Blog Talk Radio? I think that might have been it. Yeah, I think they cited me for conduct detrimental to Blog Talk Radio. That's okay. I would do it again and would gladly serve another one-week suspension if it meant getting away to the Delaware shoreline, as that's where I was last week. Sure, I'll do that again. Welcome in. I'm pleased to be back, and here we go. We're going to be talking baseball, August 4th, two-thirds of the season now down, and we got a lot of trade talk to go through. We got a lot of teams that, well, some were kind of surprising buyers, in my opinion. We're going to talk about a lot of those. We're actually going to be joined in here, and I'm thrilled about this. We're going to be joined by Jason Braddock from ESPN 97.5 in Houston. And we're going to be talking a little bit of the Astros. He'll be joining us in here at about 7:15 this evening. Like I said, a lot of trade stuff we kind of got to get through. And, why don't we get around and let's start doing that. Let me bring Caleb in. Caleb, how are we doing tonight? You're on the line with us, huh, this evening?
Yep.
Are you?
I'm here.
You're on the road somewhere, are you?
Yes, I am. I'm actually at a friend's house. Actually, we're all having a get together. This is the final time that we're all hanging out before everyone here heads off for college. So we're just all hanging out. So I'm here doing that. So.
Good going. When school starts? School's starting soon, I guess. You college guys start earlier anymore.
Yeah, I go back August 24th. That is my first day, so I'm looking forward to that. So,
all right, and you started the internship this week, right?
Yes, I did. I did.
We'll have to get started.
I began yesterday. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say we'll have to get talking a little bit about that and get a little bit of the sense for that one.
Yep. Definitely.
Nick as well is here. Nick, when do you start? When do you start back to school?
I move in the 23rd, and my class is beginning.
Yeah, see, it's really funny. College starts earlier and earlier. You know, we used to get out. I remember back. Well, this was long time ago, obviously, but back when I was in school, we'd get out about the same time I think as you guys did, but. We didn't start back until after Labor Day, just like, I guess, a lot of the schools. Now, it was interesting because I saw a post up from a friend of mine on Facebook where their daughter was heading back to school already in Indiana. And apparently in Indiana, they now have that year-round, educational calendar. Is that the deal there? I know you've been to Indiana, right, Caleb?
Yes, that's how they have it there. Here, though, we start everyone actually begins this Friday is their first half of a day, and then Monday is their first full day. So mm-hmm. I guess we go back about 2 weeks later or so than everyone else does here. But yeah, we definitely go back a lot sooner than I would like to. But yeah, I would definitely not want to do the year round thing. That would not be fun.
I think it's most appropriate, though. That's just my personal opinion. As a former educator, I think it's the right thing to do. But I'll tell you honestly, if I were a kid, I'd be depressed going back to school on August 3rd or whatever it was yesterday. I guess
exactly
August 3rd. That is depressing. Anyhow, let's get talking a little bit of baseball. Hey, Caleb, I don't know. Do you have the sports machine since you're on the road? Do you have that ready to go?
I do.
You do have the sports machine
tonight.
Oh,
look at that!
Outstanding.
On the
tonight,
road
through
everything.
The use of the sports machine.
There we go. All right, so get us up to date.
Yep. All right. So we got Chicago at Pittsburgh. That will be the second game. Last night's game was completely rained out, postponed to a later date. So we have to figure out when that is. We have Arizona in Washington. They are delayed currently. Boston at the Yankees. We got the Dodgers in Philadelphia taking on your Phillies there, Mike. We got Minnesota at Toronto. Kansas City in Detroit. San Francisco in Atlanta. And St. Louis at the Reds. Those are all the early games. Then some of the later games here. We've got the Astros. We're going to be chatting about them. They are in Arlington tonight to take on the Rangers. We got Tampa in Chicago for the White Sox. San Diego at Milwaukee. Mariners at the Rockies. Indians at the Angels. And the final game for the evening is Baltimore out there in Oakland.
Mm-hmm. All right. Real good. Let's jump over and take a look at the useless power rankings. We're gonna get talking here for a couple moments before Jason jumps in here, and we might as well do it right now. Let's do this right now. The Toronto Blue Jays were the biggest mover according to the USA Today power rankings. They moved up five spots to number 8. Now I got to be honest with you guys, and I'm gonna do it right now. We're gonna start doing this regularly on a lot of our programs, and I'm going to start it this evening. I'm going to send out what I'm calling the Frat House Sports' cleanup hitters poll question for the evening, and I'm going to be tweeting it out right now. And the question is, who were the biggest MLB trade winners? Was it the Astros, the Royals, the Mets, or the Blue Jays? And I have just tweeted that out as of right now, so if anybody wants to respond back to that, I will be bringing up your comments. Astros, Royals, Mets, or Blue Jays is who were the biggest winners? And, of course, if you want to mention somebody else, by all means, mention a different team. But the Blue Jays, it seems to me, I'm frankly surprised they were as big a factor in the trade deadline as they were.
They made some moves that I was very shocked about. I was not even really – I mean, they weren't even on my really radar. I mean, I was thinking they were going to make a couple of things, but they – Wow. All that I can say is just wow.
Yeah, I mean, they're in third place. Of course, they're tied for second, technically, because they've got an identical mm-hmm. record, almost an identical record with the Baltimore Orioles. They're 5.5 games out of first, but it's the Yankees, it's the Orioles, and it's Toronto. I'm really wondering whether, in fact, Toronto has pushed all the chips into the middle of the table on this year. And whether that's really a smart move. I mean, because I'm not sure it's going to pay off for them. I'm going to be honest. They got a little bit of a mountain to climb yet.
They do.
I mean, obviously, they're right now, they're in the wild card. Obviously, they're in the wild card conversation. Mm-hmm. But boy, oh boy, this is just really, really slim. And one of the other analyses I read was that by doing what they have done, they have virtually left their pantry for all intent and purpose empty down in their farm system. They really don't. Certainly, they've got young guys that they're working on and that they're bringing up, but their really really top prospects were all moved with these deals that were made over the past weekend. And I really, really question whether it was the prudent thing for the Toronto Blue Jays to be doing. I don't know. Nick, jump in. What do you think?
I think, like we said last week and the week before that and the week before that, the last couple of weeks, we were going to see a lot of teams that were buyers. And because there's so many buyers in the league right now, there's so many teams that are in contention, you pretty much got to put all your chips into this if you're going to make it worth it. Otherwise, what real advantage are you getting? Because every other team's going out and getting guys as well. I liked what they did. I think they made some moves that not necessarily are questionable, but in terms of the future could be perceived as questionable. But I really like what they did. I thought they definitely they were a winner, at least.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, they're a winner from the standpoint. See, that's where I'm going to go with.
I don't think they are. Yeah, I don't think that they are, because they sacrificed 11. Okay, let's just 11 pitching. It was 11 pitching prospects that they had to give up.
Wow.
Because it was four guys. Okay, 11. Just let that number sink in.
Wow,
okay,
that is
and
a lot.
And out of those, yes, it is. And out of those, I believe, from what I've heard from the Toronto fans, got a couple of buddies up there, that they still have their two of their top six left, but they gave up everyone else. And see, I don't really think – I don't get it. And especially because they went after Tulowitzki,
right,
which was not really a need. Rivera, that wasn't really a need either. I mean, their offense is perfectly fine as is. But I do love the price. That was
sure.
Beautiful move. That was the best one, hands down. But everything else was not really needed. The bullpen move, okay, yeah, I can see where that would be needed. But, I mean, for the offensive help, why on earth would you want that? That's not how you win championships. I'm sorry, but it's not. It's with your pitching. That's how you win.
Here's another question I have real quick for anybody, and I don't know whether maybe somebody can look it up real quick, or maybe one of you guys know it off the top of your head. What's the remainder of the contract left on the Price deal? How long do the Jays get him for?
This season, that's it. He's a rental.
That's it? Are you kidding me? See, that's another clear indication. Yeah, see,
they
that's another clear indication that what they're
prospect.
Doing is... Oh, man alive. I don't know if this is a smart move.
I really don't think it is. No, it's not. And especially because on that one deal right there, they gave up, I want to say, their second or third best pitching prospect in Daniel Norris. In fact, he might actually have been their number one guy, who is going to be ready. He may have potentially been on the September roster, but he was definitely going to be on the team next season, from what I've heard in Toronto. So I just don't understand why you would sacrifice the next 5 years or so for 2 months of a season to have a shot, not even just a chance, that you're not even in you aren't even winning your division, but yet you give up all those things for that. So I don't like that move. And I even wrote up an article about this, and people were giving me a bunch of hate for it. They were like, oh, it's such a great move. It's like, well, not when you trade 11 pitching prospects. I'm sorry, but 11 pitching prospects? Why on earth would you do that in the first place? I could understand maybe five, you know, four to five, maybe six. But 11?
I don't think Nick's probably throwing hate, but I think he definitely disagrees with you.
hate for any of my boys. But, no, Caleb, here's what I'd say to you is I would say you're talking about Revere's not a need, Tulo's not a need. Most teams in contentions don't get needs. They get depth or they get better. The Ben Revere acquisition, I think at the very least, he's a platoon guy. He's a pinch runner in this situation.
Yeah.
One extra game, one extra playoff game.
That's actually a good move. I'll give him that. That was I don't have as big of an issue with that move as much as I do the Tulowitzki move.
Well, even the Tulowitzki move. I mean, if you look at I'm just pulling, yeah, they get Troy Tulowitzki and LaTroy Hawkins for Jose Reyes, Miguel Castro, Jeff Hoffman, and Jesus Tinoco. I'm assuming at least Tinoco is one of those prospects you mentioned. But
mm-hmm. He is. Yes.
Okay, so Tulowitzki, if he's healthy, he's hands down the best shortstop in baseball. Now, that's a big if, but I don't understand exactly. I mean, maybe, like you said, it's not a necessity. It's not a need, but it's an improvement if he's healthy. And at this point, I mean, the Blue Jays preying on health. It's not like the Eagles where you're putting your whole season ahead of it. You understand where you stand, and you
very
realize
true.
That you
yeah.
need a lot to go right for you in order to bring this division out, but you're not so far away that you don't need everything to go right for you. So I don't think it's that big of a risk. But if he stays healthy, I mean, it's an upgrade. They're better, so I don't see that as being necessarily a loss. And you talk about the pitching prospects. 11 is a lot, and I agree with you. 11
yep.
pitching prospects is a lot of pitching prospects. Prospects are prospects. And I say the
yep.
same thing whenever I talk to buddies about trades. And you look recently, and people will tell you Amaro depleted the Phillies' farm system, or he traded away all their prospects. Who has he traded away that is worth any note? Brandon Moss, who was with the team for a year and a half and was, you know, he's an okay player. Gier Gonzalez, who's a five pitcher, a four pitcher. Trevor May, who's a back-end starter with the Twins. I mean, prospects are prospects, and you got to take your shot. And the Blue Jays, they made a decision here. They said, we're going to go for this year. We're not that far off. The Yankees can't stay this hot forever. We're going to turn things around. We're going to stay healthy. We're going to bring in, if not the best, one of the best shortstops in the game. We're going to bring in a speedy outfielder. We're going to bring in one of the best starting pitchers in the game for 2 months and then clear salary. Not to mention we got cash for, what's his name, the pitcher they gave up. Felix.
Oh.
I look at it, and I think they put themselves in a good position. And if their plan is to go for it this year and to win this year and to get better, not necessarily needs, but to get better, because you talk about needs, what's their need? Pitching. And they went and they got David Price. Now, you can't get David Price and James Shields and Tyson Ross. You can't get them all. They went, they got David Price. I thought they did a good job, and they're a better team than they were on July 30th. Or July 24th, I guess, because they made moves before the deadline. But they're a better team than they were mid-July.
All right. Let me do this, because we're kind of on a tight timetable here. I want to get our guest in here. I want to come back to the Toronto Blue Jays, because I hear what you're saying, Nick. I'm not sure. I'm in Caleb's corner. But let me get Jason Braddock in here with us. Jason's the co-host for the Deep Post program on KBME 790 AM down in Houston, and also one of the regular talkers over there on ESPN 97.5 in Houston. Jason, thanks for joining us here on Cleanup Hitters. How are you tonight?
Very well. How are y'all doing?
Real good, real good. Listen, let me ask you a real quick question. What were the big news? What was the big news today on the airwaves? Was it Arian Foster, or is it the Houston Astros?
It's definitely Arian Foster.
Yeah, okay. All right. So Houston's a football town? I mean, talk to me. Are your fans down there in a lather over what the Astros are doing, or what?
Yeah, Houston's definitely a football town. But after the way they've suffered through the Astro seasons, the last several seasons, they definitely were late to the party this year with the Astros. But here over the last couple of weeks, especially with the trades of Scott Kazmir and Carlos Gomez, that they're finally starting to get geared up here. Like I said, they were late to the party, but now they're really starting to pick up with it, with the Astros still being in first place. And definitely the series against the Angels really got the city fired up.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting, because we had an Astros fan on the other week, and they were saying, boy, the fan base was really in a lather about it. And yet, I got to be honest with you, I hop around the country. I listen to some sports talk radio from all over the country. And I got to be honest, I haven't heard quite, as you're pointing out, the groundswell coming from it. What's your take on what the Astros did in the offseason? We were just talking a little bit about the Toronto Blue Jays. I kind of think that the Toronto Blue Jays oversold themselves. Some people are saying that the Houston Astros may have done the same thing. What's your analysis, I guess, on what the Astros did at the trade deadline?
Well, with the Astros, a lot of people thought that might have just been a team that was a little bit lucky or it got hot for a second, but didn't really feel like they could sustain the first place position, especially as right before the All-Star break when the Angels took the position and passed the Astros up. But then after the Astros came back, and then you also hit with the George Springer injury with him being out for 6 weeks. And so a lot of people expected with this young of a team that they would just kind of just start to fall apart. But when the Astros responded well after the All-Star break, started winning games, then with the trade to get Scott Kazmir, then he comes out with two great performances since joining the Astros, one on the road, one at home. Then Carlos Gomez comes in here. The catchers start hitting well. And they're doing all this after the All-Star break without George Springer. So a lot of people are really starting to get that feeling that, hey, you know, this team is for real. Although they're young and this youth is really carrying them, you know, well, a lot of times with young ball clubs, not only in baseball but in all of sports, one or two things happen. Either they get out there and the moment's too big for them, and because they don't have a lot of people that's really played in that position before, they start to fall apart. Or sometimes it goes the other way, and because they're so young and they're so fired up, and they really don't realize how big the moment is, and so they don't get caught up in that, and they just they don't understand that, hey, we're not supposed to be this good, and we're not supposed to be winning like this, and they just go out there and continue to stack win upon win and have fun while doing it. And that's probably the main thing about this Astros team that's so unique is just how much fun they have. You know, with the club Astros, after the win, they go into the clubhouse, and they have the fog machine and the disco lights, and they just celebrate and they have fun, and I think that really helps carry this team, especially when they start piling up several wins together. And even when the losses hit, that excitement just carries them on.
Jason, this is Nick. A quick question for you. You keep mentioning the beliefs that the Astros might be getting lucky or they might be getting hot or whatever it may be, but from your analysis, you're much more familiar with the team than I am. This is a young team. They've got a really, really bright future ahead of them. I think they might have even surprised some people being this good this soon. But are they this good, do you think? Or do you think maybe they are getting a little lucky, they are getting a little hot, and they're just riding it? Because as we look down the stretch, that might come into play. It might come into play. You know, things might fall back into place, whether it's right before the playoffs, sometime during the playoffs. Is this team really a 60-win team right now?
Yeah, they're definitely a 60-win team. In baseball, to be able to sustain this type of track record over this long of a season, even getting hit with the injuries, this team, you know, even when they lose, they like I said a while ago, it's like the youth, they don't realize that they're supposed to be out of the game. I mean, you have Lance McCullers go out and have a horrific game and give up 6 innings in the first inning, and they're down 6-2, and the next thing you know, they're down 11-3 to a Rangers, a solid Rangers team, and they keep fighting back, and they bring it back to a 12-9 game. They're never out of the game, and I think they lead all the majors in runs scored after the seventh inning. So it's an exciting team. Like I said, they never give up, and then even when some of their hitters go into a drought, other hitters on the team pick them up. You look at what the catchers have done over the last week or so with Jason Castro and Hank Conger. Castro's really struggled hitting all year, but then he just turns around and you have two homers from him in a couple nights. Then Conger goes into bat for him, subs in for him, and he has two home runs. Both of them, the team hasn't had a grand slam all year, and then within 3 days, your catchers, Conger and Castro, both hit grand slams. So, I mean, the team is getting power and RBIs and hits at the right time, and they're getting it throughout the whole team. You just get that feeling from them that somebody's going to step up and perform. I believe there's 8 players on the team that has 10 or more home runs, and there's 2 wow. other players that has 9 or 8 homers.
That's fantastic. You know, you make a great point, Jason. One of the things that you had just said there earlier was that, you know, there wasn't a lot of expectation, you know, for this team. As an outsider looking in, and I think our panelists, Nick and Caleb right here on my panel, can vouch for this, while things were going and rolling early on in the season for the Houston Astros, a lot of us were sitting back going, oh, come on, that's just now. That's not going to be sustained. There's no way they're going to be able to keep that up. And yet, son of a gun, they have been able to. And you're right. I think that it's almost becoming now, it seems like it's almost becoming infectious. There's something very, very similar to the Astros this year that way I think we saw in some respects for the Kansas City Royals last year. I got that same kind of feeling from the Royals last year. You think that would that be a fair comparison? I mean, they're both young teams. It's somewhat similar, isn't it?
Yeah, they definitely are, and especially in the regards of where most of the country is. You know, like you said, not giving them the credit that this team is really in that hunt. And then as they start getting credit and continue to pile on wins, it's like they're having to check off boxes just to get a little bit more credit. Like, oh, okay, well, maybe this team can get in, but, you know, they can sustain some wins, but they'll get in as a wild card. And then after a couple more wins, and they go up and win a series against the Royals or win a series against the Angels, they're like, all right, well, this team, you know, maybe they can't win that division, but they're one and done. So it's a team that while the nation and even the local fan base is slow to give them credit, they're not playing for the credit of the outside world or for the fans. They're playing for each other in that locker room, and I think that's one thing that makes them so dangerous. They're young, they're stubborn, and they don't ever think they're out of a game or out of a series.
One final question for you, and then I'll let you go. Because of the fact that your fan base, as you pointed out, has come on, as you say, late to the party, and perhaps maybe because this team is perhaps, okay, maybe we say overachieving for this season, would it also be fair to say that if, in fact, the Astros don't make it to the World Series as the AL representative, would it be fair to say that your fan base would not be disappointed, that they'd be okay with it if that doesn't happen?
You have to look at what this Houston Astros team has put out as a product the last few years, and it hasn't been a pretty product or anything that you could sell. You couldn't even give this away for free, to put it bluntly. So to have a team that's going out and instead of being the laughing stock or having funny nicknames like the Lastros, and instead of being a mockery, it's a team that's in first place late in the season. You have good pitching with Keuchel and Kazmir and McCullers before this last performance. You have hitters that are stepping up. It's a good product. So, yeah, I think it's fair to say if they go out there and they obviously don't make the World Series, if they go out there and lose in the first round of the playoffs, this is by far still a very successful season for the Astros because this fan base just never expected it. And of course, nobody in the media that I know expected this. It came out of left field, if you will. And, it's a plus to be able to give the fans of Houston a win in baseball again.
You've been listening to Jason Braddock, and you can catch Jason over at KBME 790 AM on the show Deep Post. When does Deep Post air, Jason?
Well, actually, that was my old show. I'm actually on ESPN 97.5 on Wednesday nights from 7 to 9 o'clock Central Time, Wednesday night on Hustle Town.
And that streams live on the Internet, so folks, ESPN 97.5 Houston. I think it's just ESPN Houston is where you can find it if you Google it. Jason, we appreciate you being on with us here on Cleanup Hitters. Love to get you back to talk a little football on our football program in the fall. We can do that, right?
All right, sounds good, guys. Thank y'all for having me.
You got it, man. Take care. All right, Jason Braddock there, giving us a little insight on the Houston Astros. Interesting situation there. I wasn't surprised by what he said. I wasn't surprised by the fact he's telling us that, hey, it's kind of a laid-back fan base because, really, they're not only surprising, I guess, the entire country. They're not only surprising every Major League Baseball fan all across the country. They're surprising their own fans. So I think in some respects, it's a win-win, as Jason's pointing out there. It's a win-win for the Astros in that respect. Okay. While we had Jason on, we've got a call here. I want to get Richard in from New York City. Richard, thanks for calling. Cleanup Hitters, what's on your mind tonight?
Hi, how are you guys?
Real good, man. Appreciate you calling.
Okay, well, I'm a Chicagoan, grew up in Chicago, still root for Chicago teams, but I'm a baseball observer, so I kind of like, you know, have a little awareness of what's happening with the Mets and the Yankees. And the Mets, boy, they really turned it around, getting Cespedes. He's like a legitimate hitter, and he has just ignited that lineup. And Lucas Duda has gone on a home run tear. Up until the other night, I think he had like 9 home runs in 8 games. And just really an amazing feat. So all of a sudden the Mets, who couldn't buy a hit, have, you know, a transformed lineup.
Yep. Well, and that's interesting because, you know, as I pointed out at the top of the program, I put out a I put out our Twitter poll question for this evening, asking people to respond to who was the biggest MLB trade winner. Was it the Astros, the Royals, the Mets, or the Blue Jays? And while we're getting a lot of response back for Blue Jays, we're getting just as many back saying the Mets. So there you go. A lot of people thinking the Mets actually were the biggest winners out of there. It's tough for me to say. Richard, well, I got you, though. One of the questions that I had in looking things over pre-show, and, you know, we were just talking earlier on at the top of the program about whether the Toronto Blue Jays strategy was the right one, and that was to push all their chips in the middle of the table or not. There's a team, though, that really wasn't as big a buyer in the market at the trade deadline as I kind of thought that they would be, and that's the Cubs. Any thoughts on that? Any thoughts on why that might have been? Or even Caleb or Nick, if you have any thoughts on it as well. But Richard, since you're from Chicago, yeah.
Yeah. The Cubs, I don't think they wanted to give up anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they don't have anybody to give up to get some good player. So I think that's really the situation with the Cubs. I mean, they need a hit. I mean, if they could have gotten Cespedes, that would have been great.
Absolutely.
Because they need it. He would have been fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The Cubs desperately need a hitter. And they just don't have enough hitting. They got some good hitters, Bryant, but he's got a head injury. They're relying on that young catcher, Schwarber, to give him some power. And the guy is like 21, 22 years old.
Right.
So I think they didn't want to give up anybody.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at the landscape of the National League. And we have talked about the NL Central, Caleb, all season long between the St. Louis Cardinals and the Pittsburgh Pirates. And here's the Pittsburgh Pirates. And now I think that they moved it down to third in the power rankings because I think I'm trying to remember who took over their number two spot. But
the Kansas City Cubs, Royals did.
Okay, there you go. The Cubs are right there. I mean, they're 10 games over 500. Obviously, they're not going to win the division. They're 9.5 games out of first place. But right now, they're the other wild card. And it seems to me they could have.
That's a big deal in Chicago. That's a big deal. To be a wild card for Chicago is like a major accomplishment.
Yeah, but you know something, Richard? Yeah. And that's an interesting observation because – we just talked to Jason down there in Houston, and as he pointed out, you know, look, even if Houston loses in the first round, everybody's going to say that the Astros had a great season. But in Chicago, there was a lot of high hope for the Cubs coming into this season. There were a lot of people that were saying, they would be number two in the league, perhaps maybe even number one. There was a lot of anticipation for the Cubs. And yet you're saying that, hey, if they make the wild card, that's going to be copacetic?
I think a lot of fans would take that. First of all, last year they weren't that good. You know, they were like maybe 14, 16 games under 500. I think 18 games under 500. So when they got John Madden, you had a feeling that, okay, this could be turning the corner to maybe a 500 club. Then they got John Lester, and then things got serious.
Right.
I mean, first they got Lester, then they got Madden. But the Cubs are a good team. And in August, they have many, many games at home. Anthony Rizzo said, well, we're waiting for August because we have a whole bunch of home games, and it's hot in August, and the ball carries. So the Cubs will have a lot of home games. I think they have maybe 15 of 19 games in August at home.
Wow.
After they come back from Pittsburgh.
Wow.
So there's the majority of the month is in Chicago. So that is a critical time for them to make a move. You know, John Madden was quoted as saying, well, it's great that we're 10 over. Now we've got to get to 15 over. So that, I think, would be their goal in August, you know, to rack up some wins and assert the home field and make Wrigley Field the friendly confines.
Right, right.
Nick, real quick from you, I just want to get your thought because you were outspoken there about what the Blue Jays did. Were you as surprised as I was that perhaps maybe the Cubs didn't make the kind of splashy moves that they could have, I guess?
I mean, I don't know that I'd say I was surprised. I thought they'd do more. They did get Dan Herron. They got some cash. They got Tommy Hunter. One of the things I was surprised to see them do is they actually moved Junior Lake for Tommy Hunter. I wasn't really expecting that. But Richard said, the Cubs, they're happy where they are right now. They're content. They got a wild card spot right now. They trust the team to be able to hold on to that. They got a good schedule ahead of them. Right now, based on their win percentage, they're an 88-89 win team in the toughest division in baseball. Speaking of the toughest division in baseball, if they were to go ahead and be buyers and put their chips into the pot and say, yeah, we're going for this year and next year, you're going up against the Cardinals and the Pirates. Yeah, you're going up against both of, not even just one team, but two of the best teams in the NL, if not the two best teams in the NL. And if you don't win the division, you're fighting for a wild card spot, which you already have. So I think they were kind of at a catch-22. There's no reason to buy, but there's no reason to sell. You just kind of got to sit pretty and hope and trust that it'll work out this year. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And you're a young team. You got a fresh manager. You've got Bryant coming up, Schwarber coming up, and you hope that the Cardinals, their age catches up. Maybe the Pirates aren't as good next year. The Cubs get better, and you've got a five-year window to take this division at some point.
Yeah, I got you. You're right. You're right. That's a good, smart, prudent.
That's a good assessment.
Yeah, it's a good, prudent, albeit conservative move, but you're absolutely right. I mean, they're not going to win the division. So if the best you're going to do is get a wild card, just get the wild card and maintain it. And once you get to the playoffs, well, then that's a different story. Then you go from there. I guess if I was kind of thinking the Cubs would have made a move at all, it would have been just for the playoffs. You understand what I'm saying? Not to enhance their position going into the playoffs, but to potentially support their playoff run. That's kind of why I kind of thought that Chicago would have made a move in the trade deadline. That's why. But
well, a comment I have is that they have a hitter named Baez. I can't remember his first name. Maybe it's Javier.
Yep.
He is a very good hitter, dangerous hitter. He was up with the Cubs last summer, last September. But he got hurt. You think he broke a finger, so he's kind of rehabbing that, and he's getting back to swinging, and they're going to call him up. and hopefully he can supply something, give him something, which would be, you know, that power surge that they could have bought on the free market. So they're hoping that their farm system will come through for them.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. All right. Well, good stuff. We appreciate you listening, Richard, and we appreciate you calling in. Keep doing so, will you, man?
Okay, sure.
All right, thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, there we go. We're getting around to everybody, slowly but surely. We're getting around to all the teams here. Let's see. Before the show, I had asked, and I'm just looking it over now. I'm looking this over for the very, very first time. And that's the trade tracker, Nick, that you sent over. I wanted a complete list, excuse me, just a list of all of the trades. You know, I got, from an observation standpoint, and I don't know. See, my problem is that I'm not sure if my memory is going to take me back to be able to anticipate all these, and I'm not sure if you guys necessarily have quite the age, I guess. But there were some that were actually describing this trade deadline as perhaps maybe the wildest ever, that it was the most active ever. Caleb, you do a lot of writing. Have you done any kind of writing on this sort of thing?
You know, no, I haven't really. Really, I thought that last year, at least on the deadline day, I feel like last year was a lot more hectic because there's a lot more players that were actually dealt that were a lot bigger. For example, Price, he got moved. And there's a bunch of other guys that were also moved. Anyway, but this year, yeah, it was very active. There's just a lot of smaller named type of a guy who got traded. So there weren't as many huge, gigantic trades.
Mm-hmm.
But I could definitely see this one being as one of the most active in that, you know, there was just a lot of trades. But for me, I thought that last year was a lot more active. But maybe I'm just thinking incorrectly, but so that's just what I'm thinking there.
Nick, let me ask you real quick. Was there a movement made here that took you completely by surprise? That you sat there going, wow, I didn't see that one coming.
I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I mean, I feel like, well, there's one when you think back to the whole Carlos Gomez situation with the Mets and then Wilmer Flores breaking in the tears.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Moved that way. And that whole thing was just kind of, I don't know if surprise is the best word, but had my eye. I think the biggest surprise of the deadline, honestly, was Tulowitzki, because since the beginning of the year, we talked about Tulowitzki as a guy that could be traded because the Rockies are sellers and he's a valuable piece and blah, 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 blah. And for, what, the third or fourth straight year, he sits down with his agent in the front office and says, let me think about it. They sit down, they talk, and he says, I don't want to be traded. Not I don't want to be traded, but if you were not going to trade me, I'm happy here. If you're going to trade me, you know, as long as I'm okay with it, I'm cool with where I'm going, I'll move. But it didn't really look like Tulowitzki was really being asked to get traded. It didn't look like the Rockies were going to trade him. And then out of the blue, I get the alert on my phone. He's headed to the Blue Jays, and they show him in the dugout, and he's kind of got this look on his face like, what's going on? He speaks out afterwards, you know, I thought I was in the loop. It took me by storm. He was upset about it. That whole situation really, really surprised me because I honestly didn't believe he was going to get traded. And then on top of that, you look at Carlos Gonzalez, who is – you know, hot as he's on fire right now. And I thought if they're going to move Tulo, they're definitely going to move Carlos Gonzalez too, because his value's at a peak. It's at a premium at the moment. And they say, we're going to hold on to him until the winter. Not necessarily we're going to hold on to him, but until the winter. And then in the offseason, we'll look to move him. That was also surprising. I thought almost everything the Rockies did this deadline really caught me by surprise.
I'm looking at the Tulowitzki trade again, And I guess I throw the question out there to both of you. Did the Rockies get value? I'm not sure they did.
I don't really know. I know that they got...
I mean, they certainly got quantity. Look, they got quantity. They got three
definitely.
Pitchers.
I don't think they
got
anyone actually of any value. I really don't. I think that they got... I'm trying to think. I don't remember exactly who it was
but
I know...
They got Reyes. They got Jose Reyes. They got Miguel Castro.
Yeah.
They got Jeff Hoffman, and they got Jesus Tinico, who's a minor leaguer. I think Hoffman's a minor leaguer as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically... Reyes was the best guy that they got.
Yeah, and that's not value.
Thanks,
I'm sorry.
No, it's not value. It's not.
Yeah.
You're right.
He'll be good.
I mean, for this year, maybe next year, but that's it. So, I mean, they did get a few prospects, but I don't think that they were anyone of really value.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. I would tell you it was a desperation move. It was, we're going to trade Troy Tulowitzki because we feel like we have to. What's his name? Who was it? Jeff Hoffman, I think, was the Blue Jays' number three prospect at the time of the trade. So he's a decent, you know, he could turn out to be a decent pitcher. I don't know anything about Tinoco. Miguel Castro has pitched in a few games this year. His numbers aren't outstanding. They were better in the minors. But... you look at like where they rank on the Rockies prospect lists. Hoffman's at 4, Castro's at 10, Tinoco's at 18. So, you know, Mike, you mentioned quantity. I'm a fan of quality over quantity. I don't want 5,000 top, you know, or 65th best prospects. I'd rather have 2 top 10 prospects.
Right.
But I don't really know much about these guys. At first glance, it kind of looks like they absolutely downgraded at shortstop, at least in my opinion, as long as Tulowitzki stays healthy, and we mentioned that earlier. But, I mean, I think what they did is they just took a shot and they said, here's 3 pitchers that we hope at least one of them turns out to be a good player, and if that's the case, we'll consider that a win. And whether we consider that a win or not, I feel like that was the mindset, and they did. They believed they made the right move. And again, it's a matter of the waiting game, just like the Phillies with Cole Hamilton trade, any other real trade that involves a lot of prospects. You just got to wait and see. You got to pray for the best.
Yep.
Yeah, and from everything that I heard from all of my Blue Jay guys, I know that they said that the prospects that they had sent weren't even really that great of a prospect. Like you guys had just said, whoever was ranked 4th.
Hoffman.
That he was the best one. Yeah. That he was the best one, but that he wasn't even that really valued in Toronto. That really the biggest pieces that they had to really give up were in the Price deal. That was the one where they gave up the most, as in the best prospects there. So, you know, I don't know. I was really shocked that, one, it had even happened. And I think Nick had said this, that it was more of a desperation thing, you know, for the Rockies. So I don't know. But all that I know is that if I were the Rockies, I would be not happy with the move that I had just had with them. It's just, I just don't like it at all.
Mm-hmm. Couple others that I wanted to bring up, and I actually wanted to bring this one up. Let me see if I can pull this one up. I found this rather interesting. I wanted to bring this up when Jason was on, but unfortunately, he had indicated to our producer this evening that he needed to kind of get off a little bit quicker than I kind of wanted him to. I wanted to keep him a little bit longer. I sent over to you guys, and I don't know whether you saw it or not, if you had a chance to read it, the... report that now Rangers Cole Hamels traded from the Philadelphia Phillies the other day to the Texas Rangers came out and made comments with regard to why he had blocked the Houston Astros from a trade possible team. Why he had indicated, I'm not going to Houston. And, you know, I'm reading through the article which came over from Fox Sports. And as I'm reading through it on the front end, it's really not telling me anything. The article wasn't telling me anything. It wasn't until I got to And let me see if I can find it. Yeah, here it is. It wasn't until I got to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, to the fifth paragraph, that I think this speaks volumes. The fourth paragraph reads, that four-year contract Hamels maintains was a big part of the decision to accept a trade to the Rangers, but not the Astros. Quote, so if it was a different situation where I had a year left or a year and a half, I probably would have gone. But because it's more of a longer term, I had to weigh those sorts of variables for those nine teams that I had on the list, and I didn't want to budge from that. Well, that sounds to me like Cole Hamels is actually saying he does not anticipate that the Houston Astros are anything more than perhaps maybe a one-and-done team, as some people have criticized the Astros for being, that they're a one-and-done team. And it would indicate from what I'm reading there, that's what Hamels is saying. He's saying, if I could have gone to the Astros as a rent-a-player, fine, I would have gone. But because I have a four-year contract, I ain't sticking around on a team that's going to be back in the basement 2 years from now. Anybody else getting the same impression on that?
What I would tell you is I think it's just as logical that it could be the opposite, and that it could be the Astros, although they might not be contenders this year, they might be one and done this year. For the next three, I know will be contenders, as opposed to maybe the Yankees or another team where he thinks – this is it. This is, you know, and after this, they're back downhill. Because I think if he really thought the Astros were going to be, or not the, I'm confusing myself. I think when he looks at the teams he could have been traded to, and he's the teams he says I want to be there for 4 years. Okay, I'm going to take a break because I'm really really confusing myself, which is bad thing here. Caleb, you go.
Okay, we have completely broken down here. That was classic. Yes, he went to the Texas Rangers. See, now I'm looking at it and I'm going, listen, Texas Rangers aren't going anywhere this year. They're seven games out of first place. They're two games out of the wild card. I suppose by some miraculous turnaround, the Rangers might be able to sneak into the wild card. I highly doubt it, but I suppose it's still obviously rather possible. The Astros obviously are a team, as we just pointed out in talking to Jason. The Astros obviously are a for real contending team, at least this year. What I take away from Hamels' comments are, I don't expect the Astros to be a contender next year, the year after, for the year after that. That's what I take away from his comments. I don't know.
Yeah, Caleb, that's what I was really thinking.
Yeah, Caleb,
yeah, that's what I thought, I mean, you just said it. I really think that they aren't really going to be a contender, and that's what he was really trying to get at, whether he actually said it or not fully. But that's what he was kind of hinting at. But I think that they will be contenders for the next couple of seasons because of what they've already built up. I mean, I really do. I really don't think that they're going to win a World Series. I really don't. I don't think that they've got enough pitching. But I do think that they will be a wild card type of a team for the next, at least this season and for next season. I don't know. I just don't see them trying to win a World Series. But I can see why Hamels wouldn't want to actually go there. But for me, I mean, why would you want to go to the Rangers? I mean, they're just... I mean, I get it. They've got the pitching. They've got some good hitters. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think that the Rangers are just more known in the fact that they have better success for longer, and they've had a better team in recent seasons. So I feel like that's why he wanted to go there and not to a team that's had a history of a losing season. That this is kind of that he may have kind of thought that this has been a 1 year only type of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I wish I had time to get and ask Jason that, because I'd be curious to hear how the fans would react to that comment coming from Cole Hamels. How would the Houston Astros fans react? Of course, maybe Jason would come back and tell me, well, they wouldn't give a damn at all because, hey, they're just happy to be here and in the party. You know, it's a very laid-back fan base down there, apparently, down there in Houston. Nothing's bothering them. Wow, look at here. We made it to the wild card. I agree with you, Caleb. What's striking me about the Houston Astros is that they're a young team. When you look up and down the lineup, they're a young team. There's no reason why this team, and I agree with you, I don't think they're winning the World Series this year. But I would not put it past them being a World Series contender maybe next year, maybe even the year after that. It's going to depend on how the contracts they currently have right now are structured. But the bottom line is, when you look up and down their lineup, you know, this isn't a team like a great example, like the New York Yankees, that when you look up and down the roster, you're seeing nothing but 30 plus years old up and down the lineup. So I think that if this team has success this year, obviously they are having success, I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be able to repeat it next year and perhaps maybe even the year after that. And that actually makes, to me anyhow, Cole Hamels' comments that much more surprising. Nick, jump in with me if you're capable of putting together a couple of words.
Okay, it's almost straight now. I agree with you guys. I think it's concerning that he said that about the Astros, because I look at the team as well, and I think this is a young team. I love the Astros. I really do. I really, really like the Astros, and I'm pulling for them, and I think they're going to be a good team for a good portion of time. I think maybe one reason why he prefers the Rangers is he comes back next year and it's he and Darvish, and all of a sudden now they're in contention. I'm just speculating possible other motivations, because it's hard to believe that Cole really doesn't believe the Astros are going to be good for the next 4 years. And if that's the case, I would have loved some follow-up questions. Why? What's wrong? You know, what's going on? Another thing might be with Lance McCullers coming through, with Colin McHugh coming through, with Vincent, Velasquez coming through, with Keuchel already on the team. He'll probably be back next year. There's not a great shot, but better shot for the Astros than really anybody else, that Kazmir re-signs with them. Houston native, was there from the time of his birth until he was drafted at 18. There's a good shot he comes back, especially if he disagrees with Cole and believes that the Astros are going to be good for a while. He'd love to be on that team, on that winning team at the top of the rotation right there with Keuchel. He might just be, not that there's any threat he's not going to be in the rotation, but maybe he wants to go somewhere and be an ace. And he fears that with Kazmir, with McCullers, with Keuchel, and then with McHugh, Velasquez, even Feldman at the end, that the rotation's overcrowded. There's too much competition. And I don't know if that's true. I'm
interesting.
Just looking for some other reason, because it really is hard to believe that Hamels would look at this team and say, I don't think they're going to, not 10 years down the road, not even 5 years down the road, but this year, next year, and the following year. And he's there
right.
For what, 4 years? But if they're good this year, next year, and the following year, then what's wrong with that? So it's almost too difficult for me to believe that those are his true motivations, although that's really what logic seems to be pointing to, and I can't come up with a better solution.
Yep. And, you know, just interestingly, and I'm not saying it's impossible, but, you know, we saw Hamels up here in Philadelphia. Boy, oh, boy. And he was on that team of the quote-unquote, you know, it was being touted, the five aces. You know, you've got Holiday, you got Cliff Lee, and you got himself. And, you know, he didn't pull the ego card at that time. Now, I'm not saying it's impossible that he wouldn't, you know, maybe now getting later in his career, he wouldn't want to pull the ego card now.
That was also his.
I don't know though if he would like to go on a, as you point out, to go down to a Houston Astros team with a squad that heavy. I don't think that doesn't strike me as the kind of thing that would bother a Cole Hamels. It hasn't in the past.
It doesn't. But again, I just the not believing Houston's going to be good for the next couple of years is just so. against everything I believe that I've got to look to something else. And not that I find this any easier to believe, but it's just, you know, straight from his comments, it's very easy to sit there and say, oh, this is what he means. And it's logical and it makes sense based on what he said. But again, it's just, how can you look at this team and say for the next 4 years, you know, they're pretenders this year and then they're falling right off? This is not a legitimate World Series. How can you say that? I don't know if, like you guys said, I don't think they're a World Series favorite this year per se, but I think over the next 4 years, they're, if not in the best position, one of the top three positions in baseball in terms of outlook, a bright future. I mean, it's a young team. They're good. They've got more guys coming through. They don't even have their guys playing at maximum potential yet, and they're already first in a division with that shares a team with Pujols and Trout. I agree with you guys in that I truly believe that that's what Hamels meant, but at the same time, I don't want to believe it because it just doesn't make much sense, at least from my perspective. Maybe he knows something we don't. I mean, he's playing professional baseball. He knows the ins and outs of the game. But I look at this team, and if Cole were to just say straight up, I don't see Houston as a contender for the next 4 years, I'd say, what? You know, so it's a little shocking, a little shocking.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. Well, it's interesting because it was the thing that jumped out at me when I read that article. That was the line that jumped out at me. And I'm reading it, scratching my head, going, wow, Cole Hamels, it sounds to me, he's saying, hey, if I were a rental, I would go to that team, but I ain't going there for 4 years because that's not where I want to maybe necessarily end my career. Interesting interesting observation. Anyhow, how about this one for an interesting observation? And let me do this real quick because I know I've been negligent in doing it this evening. Hey, if anybody wants to jump in, please, 347-826-9964. We've heard from a couple of people here this evening already. Our good buddy Rich up in New York, our Chicago fan, he gave us a call here this evening. 347-826-9964. You can as well. If you're listening on a computer, hit us up on Skype. Oh, Skype the Talk is working. Thank you, Blog Talk Radio. Otherwise, jump in the chat room, leave us a message there, or hit me up over on Twitter at Frat House Mike, where we have our Twitter poll going for this evening asking who was the biggest MLB trade winner? Was it the Astros, the Royals, the Mets, or the Blue Jays? If you want to jump in on that, look me up over at Frat House Mike and give us an answer to that question, or hit me up with any comment over there as well if you care to. How about this one for an observation? It was a couple of weeks ago, and if I'm not mistaken, I think Nick, we've got you back on the air with us next week. I'm hoping we do. Okay, I remember us having a conversation that we were going to come back in the middle of August, and we were going to take a look at whether the trade deadline would be better served in the middle of August versus the end of July. We had this conversation a couple of weeks ago. Of course, you went and logically shot holes into my theory. but nonetheless, we are going to do that. Somebody's got to remind me this week as we get closer to the 11th. That I got to do the analysis on that so that we're ready to go. That'll be a hot topic on next week's show. And that is, would there be less buyers come next week than we saw, I guess, last week as the trade deadline came to a close? Nick, you almost admitted it right at the top of the program when we were talking about all the trades, and you said, you know, the reason that things probably were as active as they were is because there are still so many buyers in the market. Well, interestingly enough, I guess within days of us having that conversation right here on this airwaves, in fact, it might have been the very next day, we get Rob Manfred coming out and saying, well, you know something? Trade deadline may need to be moved. And it was very nice because it was reported over on ESPN. And I think, hold on, right here. He said, after hearing the Frat House Sports' cleanup hitters program last evening, I think that the July 31st deadline is something that we may want to revisit. Son of a gun! What do you think of that? Nick, jump on it, baby!
You said I almost admitted it, and I'll tell you, I said almost. We talked just, what was it, maybe even 10 minutes ago about this being such an active deadline, maybe one of the most in history, most active in history, and in terms of numbers, it really was. Again, I think the reason we saw so many teams really not even just make a move, but really, really, really cash out and make a splash, like the Mets or like the Blue Jays, is because they have to outdo all of the other buyers. I also think it's active because there are so many buyers, and I'll grant you and Rob Manfred and Caleb and Sean that, but I also think that just because we've seen it in the league now for one, maybe 2 years, where there's this many trades, doesn't necessarily mean we have to take action. I mean, if this remains the scenario for another 5 years and we trace this to be the leading motivation, then maybe we look at it and we say maybe we move the deadline back. But right now, I don't see it as being necessary. Mm-hmm. Because, again, I think pushing it back 2 weeks, it's not that much time that it's really going to eliminate that many buyers. And B, I think you'd see a lot less rentals, a lot less trades on the other side, because 6 weeks and 8 weeks, 2 months, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it makes a difference. And I don't know if I'm going to go ahead and splurge 8 top prospects in return for 4 starts from a starting pitcher, 8 starts from a starting pitcher, whatever it may be, however many they get in 6 weeks, I guess it would be 7 or 8. And at the same time, again, even more, if you're giving up one of those rentals, if you're looking to trade one of those guys, by extension, you're going to get less in return. You're going to get less prospects, and I think you'd see less interesting moves. You'd see less of an opportunity for these teams to really make a difference at the deadline, because they wouldn't be getting those prospects to turn the club around. We talk about a good GM waits until the last minute, and I believe that to be true. And if that's the case, you're getting less in return, and I think it hurts. I don't – again, like I said last week and the week before, I don't think I'm totally opposed to the idea. I'm too hesitant to really commit to it, and I feel like we haven't seen enough years in a row where we want to move back the deadline in order to move back the deadline. I think if this happens for the next 5 years and we say the same thing every year, then maybe we talk about it. But at this point, I just don't see it as seeing it as being necessity. I think we look to next year and say, all right, maybe it'll come back down to earth in 2016, 17, and 18.
You bring up an interesting point. You bring up an interesting observation. And I get that's the way I should phrase it, observation. And let me get Caleb's thought on it as well, because if I heard you correctly, Nick, what you're saying, I think part of what you might be saying is that if we push it back, it not only obviously is going to change the dynamic, I think, of the way the entire process goes on, but it might also change the thinking in the personnel that one would be going for in a trade. In other words, could it be possible that we would see, perhaps, maybe, as you just, great analogy, example, would we see perhaps less pitchers traded and perhaps maybe more offensive players traded? If you notice, in this particular trade deadline, there were a lot of pitchers that were moved. We could see that number potentially diminish simply by pushing it back a couple of weeks. Perhaps maybe you wouldn't see as many pitchers moved. So you bring up an interesting observation that it could have an impact on the type of player that would actually get moved. Any thoughts on that one, Caleb? And Nick, if I'm wrong in my assessment of what you said, correct me.
That's about right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'm really with Nick here. I really think that I don't want a trade line that's all the way back into the middle of August, just for the simple fact that there won't be as many rental players, which, yeah, okay, I get that'll be a really good thing for the majority of all teams. But still, I like the fact that a GM has to make a commitment. That's kind of a gutsy move. He's got to make a choice. Okay, do I want to move somebody, or do I just want to sit here and hope that we can sit here and win? So I like the fact that it's where it is right now, because it's far enough to where they can see to the finish line, but not so far to where they say, oh, well, I'm not going to actually make a move. So it keeps things a lot more interesting, because I feel like there would be a lot less trade if it were to be in the middle of August, even towards the end of August.
Caleb, I agree with you. And another point, another observation, another thing we might see is in September, you get 40 men on your roster. Maybe that utility man, the Juan Uribes and Kelly Johnsons to the Mets, you see less of that, less need for that, because rather than going 4 weeks without a utility man, you go 2 weeks before you can have 15 extra guys on your roster and substitutions at will. I think, and again, I don't think any of this is necessarily bad. I just think it's a drastic change, and I think it's a bigger change than everybody would be expecting. And I don't know that the way the league is right now necessarily calls for that just yet.
You know what the X factor is here in this conversation? It's a team that we were just talking about at the very, very top of the show, and that's the Toronto Blue Jays. Because, Nick, you pointed it out 2 weeks ago when I first brought this topic up. As you astutely did, mathematically, as I pointed out, poking holes in my argument, where you indicated, well, you know, listen, you can go and take a look at what the trade deadline might look like on the 11th or on the 15th of August, but of course, the trade deadline will already be passed for the teams this year, and that could dramatically affect what the standings could be 2 weeks henceforward. The Toronto Blue Jays could be a perfect example of that. 2 weeks from, or I guess maybe let's put it this way, 1 week from now, had the Toronto Blue Jays not made all the moves that they did, they might not have been buyers. But a week ago, they were. And there's a perfect example of the type of team I think we're talking about, right? Would that be accurate?
Exactly. That's exactly why I think it should be exactly where it is. Because, one, we got some excitement out of it. We got some hopefulness of, hey, what's actually going to happen here? But also, for the Blue Jays, it gives their fan base there a lot more to want to cheer for, instead of them just sitting there saying, oh, well, I guess we can shoot for next season. But now they actually have something to hope for. So I like where it is right now, because it gives all of the teams that all traded, they have hope until all the way into mid-September. So I just don't like it being shifted all the way back to the middle of August.
I don't know if this is a word analogize, but I'm going to use it anyway. I'm going to go ahead and analogize the situation to a basketball scenario. So if the motivation behind moving the deadline back is to make it more clear to GMs whether their team is a buyer or a seller, you're basically saying, I want to increase the percentage that they're right in their guessing. So in basketball, a great three-point shooter will make 40% of his three-point shots. Now, why would we have the three-point shot if they're only going to make 40% of it? Why wouldn't we want them to make at least half? Let's move it in and make it a little easier. And that, if you put it like that, sounds silly, you know? And I think not much different than this, saying, let's move it back so more GMs can get a better feel. I mean, this is their job. This is what they get paid to do. They get paid to sit there and evaluate the team. They do this from preseason to offseason. They do it all year round, day to day to day. That's what they do. That's what they get paid to do. That's their job description. Evaluate and analyze the team, make adjustments accordingly. And if you're going to sit there and say, because we're not so sure if these GMs really know who they are just yet, we're going to give them a little extra time, then that's basically saying, what's the point of a GM? You know, at that point, you could sit there and you could say, September 1st comes around. If you're within 5 games, you're a buyer. If you're not within 5 games, you're a seller, and you have to make moves like that. It's just, and that's an extreme, but it just to me kind of seems like we're undermining the value of a general manager, and we're saying they can't do this on their own, so we're going to give them a little extra help. They know going in they only have till July 31st. They know that, and they plan for that. I don't think it would be necessarily not fair or unfair to say you only have until July 31st, because that's 2/3 of the season. I think the purpose of a GM is devalued, it's underestimated when you talk about moving the deadline back, because again, I think the primary motivation, and unless unless if I'm wrong, tell me, but it seems to me like the primary motivation is to make this decision a little easier as to whether a GM's team will be a buyer or a seller.
Not easier. My intention was in, I guess, offering up the availability of more players, if you know what I'm saying. Because if we have more buyers, then that means you're going to have fewer players available. If you have less buyers, then they're going to have more teams that are going to be sellers. So what I was offering it out to was, hey, more teams would open up their roster if, in fact, we push it back, because there would be less of a chance of them being a buying team. That was my motivation. I'm not trying to make it easier. At the same time, though, I do understand that with my proposal, what you are doing is you're devaluing players, because if there are more players on the market, well, then the value for each one is going to come down, obviously. In other words, Cole Hamels may not have garnered, how many players was it, six, that the Bills got? May not have gotten six, because if you had that, you know, if you had more teams on the market with more pitchers, well, then perhaps maybe you wouldn't get as much for, say, a Cole Hamels. I understand that. I'm not looking necessarily to make it easier. I don't know if I necessarily do agree with your assessment there completely, and perhaps maybe you were stating it more of as an exaggeration. I don't think you're demeaning or devaluing the position of the general manager simply by pushing the trade deadline back 2 weeks. Because let's get this one straight. The general manager's job is not just for a couple of weeks in the season. It's all year round. You know, personnel development is a nonstop job. You're going, you know, constantly with that one. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's devaluing their position, but.
So I would just want to throw this last thought out to you, because you say maybe a team might open up more players. I would imagine by that you mean we'd see more players be moved, more trades go down, and then I'd say we just got some talking about how this might have been the most active deadline in history, unless I'm still misunderstanding.
I'm saying there would be more players available, not necessarily that there would be more moves. In fact, there might actually be fewer moves, because there'd be fewer buying.
What you're saying.
There'd be fewer buying teams.
No, there would be less moves, no doubt.
Right, there'd be fewer buying teams, right. But you'd have more players to be selecting from.
I got you. So you're, and I'm just trying to understand what our standpoints are. I'm not, this isn't at all combating your point. You would rather see, let's say, less.
Go ahead.
Moves,
go right for it. It's okay with me.
I'm trying to understand. You would rather see less moves, but more big names on the move than
Correct.
More moves and more big names stay where they are.
Correct. Because look, here's my point. Here's my point. You know, we can sit back here, as we talked about, right at the and here we go. I'm going to go right back to the top of the program. Let's go back to the Toronto Blue Jays. But Caleb and I have come down and said, I don't know if this is really the smartest move in the world for the Toronto Blue Jays. Now, I contend that the Toronto Blue Jays perhaps maybe wouldn't have done what they did if it were 2 weeks later. So that takes them out of the market completely, and in fact, maybe they're not buyers at all. Maybe they sit back, pat, or maybe they open up, and they say, well, all right, we're open to maybe one little trade here or there. Bottom line is, when you have fewer buying teams, you're obviously going to have more teams that potentially would be willing to have an open mind to moving some of their resources. And when you do, you're going to, obviously, as I just pointed out, you're going to devalue what is available. So a top-rated pitcher, like I said, like a Cole Hamels, may not get six players in return, might only get four or five, but you're going to have more players available in a much more competitive, in what my opinion is, a much more competitive market, because you won't have as many buying teams. There are teams that bought, guys. Let's get this one straight. There are teams that bought, and we know this as well as we're sitting here. There are teams that bought in this trade deadline that will not make it into the playoffs. What's the point of that?
Go ahead, Gil.
No, that's my question. There it is. It's wide open.
I understand more where you're coming from, at least, and I think the logic makes a lot more sense, because at first I was confused with everything you were saying and where you were coming from, but I get it now. I'm all set. I think at that point it more comes down to a preference of what you want to see happen in the bigs, and it also comes down to, again, my point from earlier, do you see that as being necessary? Because 4 or 5 years ago, this wasn't really much of a discussion, because we didn't see that as being an issue. Now, if this is an issue again for the next 3 years, we talk about it. But if next year it goes back to where it was and nobody's discussing this as a potential possibility, then we don't have to worry about it. But I think what it does is it also – and tell me if I'm wrong here – but it might also, if you're buying and not making the playoffs, keep the divisions and the pennant race a little more competitive, a little tighter down the stretch. Because you've got more teams fighting at that in game 162, you've got more teams fighting for a win than you do, you know, if all those teams were sellers.
It potentially adds for parity. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And mind you, the way it is currently, I would say this: it not only adds for the potentiality for parity in the season that's operating, I think it adds potentially to parity in perhaps maybe a future season, next season, or maybe even the season after that, depending on whether you've got players with real value or did you do nothing more than pick up a bunch of rentals. Now, if you did nothing more than pick up a bunch of rentals, they're not going to help you at all past, you know, the end of September if you don't make the playoffs. So that's, you know, that one's, you know, that's a waste to me. But, no, I can see what you're saying, that the way it's currently structured right now, maybe one of the pluses that comes out of it is you get a little bit more parity in division. Yeah, I can understand that. I don't know if it completely outweighs what I'd like to try to get accomplished. I still feel that I think it's a good idea to consider moving it back, but...
Well, again, I'll go back to my very primary argument. I'm not opposed to moving it back, and I'm absolutely not for moving it back. I'm hesitant. I don't see it as a necessity at this point, and I see both sides. I do, and I think it comes down to a preference as to what's more important and what you'd rather see. You weigh pros and cons, and you say, what pros do we really want to see? What cons do we really want to get rid of? And again, I understand the whole point of the show is for us to have opinions and debate them, but I don't really have that strong of an opinion. All I'm trying to do is just play devil's advocate. But if they move it back, they move it back. If they keep it where it is, they keep it where it is. And honestly, I'll be 100% truthful, I don't see it as being that big of a difference either way. It'll be a difference, and the changes we mentioned will be in effect, but I don't think it's going to change baseball. I don't think we're going to look at it in 25 years and say, oh, well, you have to account for 30 years ago, the trade deadline was this. Like we did with, you know, the live ball era, the dead ball era, the steroids, right. The fences, the pitcher's mound, the height of the pitcher's mound, the strike zone. We say, oh, well, you have to consider this, 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 and this. I don't think anybody's going to look back and say, oh, well, you have to consider the deadline was 2 weeks earlier or 2 weeks later.
Yeah, right. I got you. No, you're right. It does sound – you're right. It does almost sound a bit silly, doesn't it?
But it does matter to a point. You know, we got to figure out what we want to do with the deadline, but I don't see it as being that big of a difference where I really feel strongly one way or another.
Gotcha. Well, you know, it creates for interesting conversation. There we go. One of the things I want to do real quick, because I know you guys last week, you were so dominating. And by the way, I got to give all you guys props. A fantastic job last week. I was surprised. It sounded really good with one guy missing. So you guys did a great job. Truly, I am kind of making light of it. But, no, you guys did a wonderful job last week. So. Very, very good, but you were so dominating. You know, the trade deadline was coming upon everybody very, very fast. I think last week the show aired on the 28th, and I think you guys were like less than 3 days. I think it was like two days and some hours from the trade deadline at that point. And so everything got into the trade deadline talk. But I do want to quickly acknowledge we had four new members inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Craig Biggio, John Smoltz. We actually had more than four, but these are the four living ones. Randy Johnson and, of course, Pedro Martinez went into the Hall of Fame. I guess that was about 10 days ago? About 10 days ago, I think. So I wanted to acknowledge that real quick. I particularly want to acknowledge Craig Biggio because I loved watching Biggio play. I thought he was fantastic. I know that there were a lot of people that felt for a long time that he had kind of gotten pulled into that group there during the steroid era, and that was one of the reasons that it was difficult for him to get in. But I send a big shout-out and congratulations to Craig Biggio for getting in finally. I think that's outstanding. Last but not least, I want to get in real quick. We got to get in our weekly Frat House Sports' Series Streak Challenge. Uh-oh. The leaderboard is looking a little different. There's a new dog at the top, and that's me. Yeah. I'm leading 10-7. Nick, you are 9-8. Caleb is 8-9. Excuse me. Sean is 7-10 at this point. And so what we're going to do is we're going to pick our teams here real quick, and you can find the results. I will have a graphic. You'll have the graphic of this up over on our Frat House Sports Facebook page momentarily after the show concludes. You can get over there, get over to Frat House Sports, leave spaces in between. Look for our little purple icon. Sean this week is picking. I was looking for the drum roll, but we don't have enough time. Sean here is picking the Angels over the Orioles. Caleb, what says you?
Well, I'm going to go with the homer choice here, but I'm going to take the Pirates over the Los Angeles Dodgers at home. In fact, I'm going to be really bold here. I think that the Pirates are going to win all three games.
Oh, should we hold him to that, Nick? Should we make that a condition of his pick?
I'm for it.
I don't think.
We won't.
I mean, I guess if you want, but that was more of a bold prediction on my end. But, I mean,
yes,
I guess
I
could have really wanted to.
I agree with you. But here's how predictable you are. Nick, just FYI to let you know. As Caleb was giving it, I already had Pirates written down. I already knew it. I knew it. That's why I wasn't going to pick the Pirates today because I'm looking at that when I'm going, I know Caleb's picking the Pirates. Nick, go ahead. Are you picking the Mariners? I got Mariners written down above your name.
I'm not picking the Mariners. I really, really need some kind of change in pace. I had the Mariners last week, though. But
yes, we know. That's why you lost.
The first time in a while, I'm not holding on to first place.
Obviously, we've got to do a better job.
Nice job. Well, listen, I tell you something. You made a mistake. You picked a four-game series. That's what killed you.
Yeah, I've been doing that lately. I got a three-game series today, though, and I'm going to go with my heart and with the best team hands down in the second half of the season, the Phillies over the
Pirates. Snap. Oh, my.
Oh, boy. Phillies, who are they playing this week? Over who?
Padres.
Okay, that might be a good bet over the Padres. Yeah, he just did that. I have a feeling. He could lose. Listen, I had already made my pick before Sean did, so I'm going with Sean. I'm going with the Angels over the Orioles. I don't normally go against my O's, but I'm doing it today. Great program as usual, guys. Appreciate it. Many, many thanks to Jason Braddock from ESPN Houston for joining us this evening. Make sure you're here with us on Thursday evening for our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show, number 204. Yeah, you want to be here for that one. In the meantime, hey, you know what you got to do? Get out there and enjoy your baseball.